What we try and do is produce the research to try and work out whether golf has got health benefits or not. And indeed, actually, all the research that we've done shows it adds years to life. You know, you're 30% less likely to die early, 30 to 50% less likely to get heart attacks, strokes, type 2 diabetes. So the science is pretty clear.
Hi, and welcome to Season 3 of the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. Before I introduce today's guest and staying on the theme of three, I'm going to give you three reasons why you should subscribe to the Golf Yourself Healthy Substack. At GYH, we aspire to be thought leaders and a respected voice in the field of health and well-being in golf. Our work has been endorsed by some of the leading figures in the golf and health landscape, including today's guest. And by getting yourself a free subscription, you will be receiving weekly, high-quality, well-informed content, including journal articles and podcasts in both video and audio, which will help you get the most out of your game of golf and your game of life. It will entitle you also to exclusive discounts with partner golf brands such as Vice Golf. And thirdly, you will become part of a growing community of golfers who are all motivated to help each other to live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives, both on and off the golf course. Wherever you are currently listening to this podcast, a link to the Substack is listed in the show notes. So give that a click, get subscribed, and become the latest member of our growing community. So introducing today's guest, Professor Andrew Murray. There are genuinely very few people better qualified to talk on this subject, golf and health, than Professor Murray. He occupies several roles, including that of Chief Medical and Scientific Officer to the European Tour Group, in which he oversees global research on the health benefits of golf in partnership with the game's global governing body, the RNA, as well as managing illness, injury, and performance on some of golf's elite professional tours and events, including the DP World Tour, the Open, and the AIG Women's Open. Indeed, for those of you who follow along or subscribe on Netflix, you may have seen Andrew appear in Season 2 of Full Swing. Or similarly, you'll often see him appear on television coverage of leading golf events, giving an insight into the work, the progressive and innovative work that he and his colleagues are undertaking to ensure that elite professional golfers have access to the best fitness, nutrition, and well-being facilities when playing out on tour. We discuss all of that and much more, including a deep dive into the research on golf and health. I do consider it a huge honour to have hosted Professor Murray on the podcast, and I know without question you're going to find this an insightful, educational, and inspiring episode, which will make you not only want to get even more out of your game of golf, but maybe even want to inspire others to take up the game too. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Well, Andrew, firstly, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. It's great to have you. I have a few thank yous, I think, to give at this point, just to have been connected to you. Sort of some of our mutual connections and previous guests on the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, Anthony Blackburn and Ian Peake in particular. They have spoken very fondly of you. And I myself and we at Golf Yourself Healthy have known of you for quite a long time, just because you are one of the leading voices ultimately on the subject of golf and health. The golf fanatics out there may recognize you from Season 2, Episode 4 of Full Swing on Netflix.
That's right. I've got a few roles, but yeah, I think some of the people that you've had on the series have been phenomenal. It's a great series. Congratulations on the work that you do, the community that you're building. Anthony's golf on prescription works brilliant, isn't it? You know, actually getting people with dementia or people with Parkinson's to get back out and playing golf and giving their carers some relief for it as well. You know, you can just see some of the joy that it brings. And again, Ian Peake's work looking at mental health in elite and professional golf is really changing what we're doing, you know. So they've been great guests to have on. And I think some of the work that I do is I'm a, you know, boring old scientist and general practitioner. So what we try and do is produce the research to try and work out whether golf has got health benefits or not. And indeed, actually, all the research that we've done shows it adds years to life. It shows that you've got a range of physical health benefits. So although you might get athlete's foot, although there is some risk of injury, you know, you're 30% less likely to die early, 30 to 50% less likely to get heart attacks, strokes, type 2 diabetes, risk of falls goes down dramatically, and it's really good for the brain. So the science is pretty clear. You know, you can decrease your risk of anxiety or depression or dementia and all these things through physical activity and golf. And I think, as you said, with I work as the Chief Medical and Scientific Officer of the DP World Tour. So we help with their strategy. We help with some development. So try to work out how we can best support the golfers and be at their best beyond that. And then also just thinking about the operational delivery, making sure that we've got the right gyms, the right nutrition, the right sports doctors, physiotherapists, S&C nutrition for our DP World Tour events, for our Ladies European Tour events, for the Open, the IG Women's Open and various other things. So learning every day. It's great to be in the golf industry, and thanks for the chance to share some of this stuff.
Yeah, well, I certainly concur with the sentiment that it's a great place to be, golf, you know, to play it, to be around it and to work in it, you know. So, like I say, very grateful you're here. I mean, I will be in the show notes of this episode putting in the link for my listeners to check out the Golf and Health Report, which I think was that 2020 that was published, Andrew, or there or thereabouts?
That's right. So the Golf and Health Report with our partners at the RNA just looks at the key questions about golf and health and summarised it at that point. But also the www.golfandhealth.org website has updated resources, so tells new stories, just shares new research. And if you've got any question about golf and health, you can kind of look to see golf's benefits for longevity, golf's benefits for physical health, mental health, even major events that are promoting health. Do you know the average spectator at our tour event get 11,500 steps? So while you might enjoy watching the football and the rugby, it's only really golf that people get real tangible, concrete health benefits from attending. Politicians and the chief medical officers are always talking about getting your 7,500 or 10,000 steps. The average golf spectator gets that in green space, connecting with, you know, friends and family, watching some great golf, but getting some health kicks as well.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about this one, this one about spectating, because that really stood out to me when I was reading this report. Now, I, for one, again, I probably put myself in the camp of a bit of a golfing fanatic. I love just about anything to do with golf. And, you know, if I think about a few times that I've been to watch live golf before, it affords the opportunity to, like few other sports would, I think, to get up close with some of these, you know, elite professionals, hear the discussions they're having with their caddies, maybe learn from their mindset and things like that. But equally, the Golf and Health Report is framing it also around that kind of the steps that you're getting in and stuff. So I almost wonder, you know, when you're in conversation with your colleagues at the RNA, like you are, whether it's the Open or any other RNA sanctioned event, what is the, is there actually like some, like an intentional objective to use watching live golf and spectating as a means to get people into the game, get them interested?
Absolutely. So I think the number one thing is it's a golf competition. So looking to provide a fantastic platform to allow the players to be at their best. But also, if we have got this chance to have 250,000 people on site, why don't we actually sell in some health benefits and give them that information? Because if you do that, and the Open have done this, you know, systematically over the last 6 or 7 years, there's information about the red route. If you actually follow the 18 holes, you'll get somewhere between 12 and 13,000 steps. You know, can you beat Rory? Okay, you might not at Port Rush be able to score better than him, but can you get more steps and get those same health benefits that you've got? So the messaging at the Open is really consistent on the health benefits of golf, on the health benefits of spectating. It also provides some information about preventing skin cancer. So the RNA do a great job on this, and they do it not only at the Open, but the likes of the IG Women's Open, the G4D, the Rolex Senior Open, where again, Carnoustie were phenomenal in their work on sustainability, on their work on health. And I think that the golf industry is actually pretty good at this overall. The World Health Organization invited me to speak at their conference on sport and health, and golf was invited. FIFA were invited as the hosts of the World Cup, and the IOC presenting on the Olympics as well. So I think that there's more to be done, but there's some good stuff that golf can celebrate in actually just going to event and watching some of the best golfers on earth, but also maybe treating yourself to a bit of better health as well. And people keep going. So if they get that message from our leading players like Nelly Korda or Rory McIlroy or Annika Sorenstam, you know, in the day, these people feeding that message in, when we surveyed them 3 months later, people had got the messaging from the golfers were 30% more likely to be more active in their daily life. So sustained health benefits beyond the event as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm looking at the report. And some of the, you know, some of the most eye-opening kind of headline stats for me, 80% of golfers are happier with their social life compared to 60% of the general population. 51% of the general population consider themselves to be in good health, but this rises to 72% of golfers. Not only does the statistic itself stand out to me, Andrew, but there's something, and there's another thing I have here, right? So this particular issue of the PGA Golf Business Quarterly magazine talking about, you know, this whole issue dedicated to golf health and well-being, there was a line in there that I find really fascinating that I want to ask you about, which I think it said something. It was either maybe a quote from you or someone else that's contributed, I can't remember, basically saying, you know, all this scientific evidence and all these publications are showing and proving that golf is good for you. But actually, the industry at large or golf at large hasn't always been the best at articulating that. So I almost wonder, you know, within the last few years and since there's been way more focus clearly on this kind of research, are you seeing a shift in the narrative? You know, because I've had guests on this podcast before who talk about, if golf clubs, for example, were to bake in health and well-being narrative into their marketing efforts to attract people in, it could have a galvanizing effect on getting more people into the game. And if I'm honest, I'm not seeing that to the extent that I might have expected, but are you?
The number of people playing golf is going up, and that's only a good thing for doctors because hopefully it means we're going to treat less patients. Golf industry, I think, have previously felt that they'll get hammered if they talk about the health benefits of golf, because a lot of people say it's a good walk, spoiled, etc. But now the evidence is clear, the evidence is consistent, and it's growing. I think people can be more confident to say, actually, you get health benefits playing golf. You can get health benefits from the age of 3 to 103, so it's absolutely for all of society. And it doesn't matter whether you're starting when you're young or when you're old, you'll still get those health benefits. The social connection benefits, there's additional space, time in green space, it can give you benefits. But I think the three things that occur to me is we can be bold in saying that golf has got health benefits, as do other physical activities. But the second thing is that, you know, actually golf facilities can do more. We can just make sure as individuals at golf clubs we're welcoming. There's options for people to play golf. You know, the 18-hole offer is great, but having different options in terms of putting, in terms of other facilities, practice nets, 3 holes, 9 holes, driving ranges, things that people can do at golf courses other than golf. The golf course down the road is amazingly welcome. You know, Craigmillar Park, I went down there with my kids to play golf. But last week I also went down sledging and they opened the kitchen up. People could get hot chocolate with marshmallows. They could go sledging. And essentially it was just a community facility. So I think that being welcoming, making sure there's opportunities for everyone to do things that they enjoy, be that physical activity, be that golf, are really important. And there's an international consensus in golf and health that shared key lessons for folk as golfers to maximise the health, which is essentially playing more often. It can be for playing longer when you are playing. It can be using or walking the golf course rather than riding a golf cart if you're able. It can be about doing a warm-up before you play. All these things that can actually take give you health benefits, but even doing a warm-up can give you a shot and a half per round as well. And then the same for facilities, really, just drilling down into the thing that facilities can do to talk about the health benefits of golf, to promote entry-level opportunities, to make sure there's opportunities for women and girls. It's inclusive, it's welcoming. And I think if those are used systematically, then we'll see even further growth in this great sport.
Yeah, the thing you said on the warm-up there is very interesting because I think it was season 2 with Ed Voss of this podcast. He's a physiotherapist and he came on and one of the most resounding sound bites that we got out of him was exactly what you've just said around the shots that you save with the warm-up. And he was talking about how some of his golf physio patients, clients that he works with may tell him, I don't want to do a warm-up because I think I look like a bit of a plonker, basically. You know, I don't want to, it's kind of like feeling a bit self-conscious when you're standing in the first tee. But I think if you can push through that, then I think that you're talking golfer's language there. That's their currency, right? Sort of, you know, shaving off a few shots. So just the other thing that will maybe tickle you slightly, and I've been toying with this for a while. A friend of mine who's listened to this podcast for quite a while now, because over time I kind of give a call to action to my listeners and say, if there's a topic that you want us to bring up on the GYH podcast as it relates to golf and well-being, let us know and we'll maybe talk about it. He emailed me and said, Chris, can you run an episode designed for the wives out there who don't actually fully understand why it is that we disappear off for 5 or 6 hours on a weekend or whatever to play golf? And I kind of thought, I'm not touching that with a barge pole because I don't want to cause divorces. All joking aside, what you said a minute ago about how the industry maybe previously felt like it would get caned if it tried to apply a health and well-being lens, this is kind of unequivocal now. This is proven. It is good for you, and I for one feel like yes, the industry could absolutely lean into it even more. So short answer is I don't think, to my friend out there, I don't think I'll be running that episode anytime soon. But maybe you want to go and have a look at the Golf and Health report, and it'll give you the answers you're looking for.
Absolutely. And I think that's it. You know, I think the golf industry must and is prioritising making sure that everyone's got the opportunity. Hopefully there'll be a time, you know, 20 years from now that participation's 50% female, 50% male or whatever it is, but everyone's had that opportunity to play. Everyone's had the opportunity to understand the health benefits that are there and that they've grabbed them with both hands.
Definitely. I wanted to ask you, Andrew, I said to you just before we hit the record button on this that the mission at Golf Yourself Healthy is in particular to inspire current and future generations of golfers to use golf as a means of overcoming adversity, building resilience, building vital life skills that you can apply them on the golf course and off too. They say that golf is a lot like the game of life, right? So I suppose I want to ask you your own perspective on that, you know, the role that golf can play in that regard. And maybe also, again, looking back through your research or the people you've come across over the years, are there any really compelling examples of people that you've come across who have used golf in that way?
There really are, Chris. I think you're a great example of someone that's experienced the benefits that golf can provide to your own life and to that of your family. And if, you know, channel something overwhelmingly positive. And working in the industry, it's amazing how often people come up or share or email and just say that, you know, golf has changed their life. Golf has saved their life. Golf has really helped their husband, their wife, their daughter, their son, just someone really, really dear to them as well. And it's amazing. You know, as a doctor, people sometimes say that tablet's changed my life, or that CPR or that rescue helicopter's, you know, completely changed my life. But I see that story for golf pretty frequently as well. And there's some amazing examples. You know, I think I had a good chat to Victoria Mallett, just sharing her story about the illness that she suffered, subsequently being a golf professional and making that difference to people day in, day out, because she's inspired to do that. Again, if you look at stories from Mulligan, again, that's a terrific resource, talking through 18 golfers who talk about, you know, their ability to achieve their goals and how golf and golf competition has really changed their life as well. So no matter where you go in the world, I think there are these stories and things that we can take heart from. But I think, Chris, that, you know, your story is amongst the most powerful there as well.
Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. And it's interesting because, hearing that from you means a lot, because I think it gives me that strength and courage to keep going, to keep talking about my son, but keep, you know, because I feel like at times people on the receiving end of this will just be like, you know, he's like a broken record, essentially. Clearly, I think through what you're saying and through how it's received by other people, you know, out of my view is, and this is what Golf Yourself Healthy is born in, that belief that kind of out of adversity can be can come really great things. And if you can channel adversity towards positive causes, there's not many fuel types like grief or adversity, in my experience anyway. You know, just one other example in this golf and health report that I just absolutely loved. I don't know if you were involved with this group of people at all, Andrew. Going down memory lane in golf is helping improve people's mental and physical health. And a group of members at the Carnoustie Memories Group at the 147th Open. Now, I just loved that because I have previously had a segment in this podcast that I've called Golf Yourself Nostalgic, because I thrive in nostalgia. That feeling I get when I think of a happy memory or go back to a certain place that holds fond memories for me, especially in a golfing context. But to see that on that piece of research, again, was really eye-opening.
Yes, and Lorraine Young and the team have done a brilliant job with Golf Memories Carnoustie. And Carnoustie in general is amazing. If you look at the women and girls program, if you look at the number of junior golfers that are playing, if you look at the health benefits for caddies that they've demonstrated there, some of the sustainability initiatives, it's amazing. But I absolutely love the Golf Memories work that Lorraine and the team have put together, the books that they've produced, the stories that come out of it, the events that you can attend. And I think Golf Memories are springing up everywhere. You know, there's chapters in St. Andrews and Troon and various different parts of the world, you know, even America, they've got hold of those stories. And it's because it works, and it's because it makes people happy as well. And I think, you know, Carnoustie is not without its golf memories, is it? So I guess you've got that really powerful narrative of the golf course that's just there, as well as further afield as well.
Yeah, it's another story that I think about with this is... So you and I, we're both Aberdonians. We can relate to each other on that level and on other levels too, I'm sure. But I was back up in Aberdeen earlier this year visiting my mum, who still lives up there. And a good family friend of ours, a guy called Drummond, who I think is in his late 80s now, he was my granny and papa's neighbour. So I've known this guy from when I was a tiny wee kid, right? And he was over at my mum's house, and I hadn't seen him in a long time. He's fit as a fiddle still, but he was a long-standing member and past captain at Royal Aberdeen, and he still has his social membership at Royal Aberdeen. So he'll go in there on the regular for lunch, and he'll sit down with his pals, and just sitting in my mum's living room and chatting to him about all these golfing memories of days gone by, like of either him playing or talking about when some of the greats of the game had come and played at Royal Aberdeen. It was just that for me was living proof there, like I'm reading about here, that's, you know, that's another manifestation of how golf is good for you, right? So incredible to see that written down in the research. The maybe one of the final things I wanted to get into with you today was just, again, putting your hat on of the work you do on the tour with the tour golfers, the tour professionals, have seen in recent times, especially in the last year, I think, especially a lot of really positive work being done on the tour as it relates to mental and physical well-being. Do you want to talk a bit more about that, kind of key headlines there and some of the key interventions that are happening now for the professionals?
Absolutely. A lot of people ask what goes on behind the scenes, because they'll see the putts being sunk, the drivers being smoked. But, you know, what actually goes into these golf events? And the golfers work incredibly hard. So you'll see that some of the facilities we'll have are gyms. And people think about golf fitness. It's not the same as marathon fitness. So you want to be strong. You want to be powerful. And all of the leading professionals now are strong, they're powerful, they can hit the ball a long way, and they're impressive athletes. And it's a completely different type of fitness to, you know, marathon running, which is my background. And I think it's just making sure that we've got the right facilities for them. The same with nutrition. We want to make sure that they've got access to good quality proteins to keep those muscles fueled, good quality carbohydrates, because it doesn't matter how good the car is. If there's no fuel in the tank, it's going nowhere. The right electrolytes, fresh fruit and vegetables, just making sure that their immune systems are topped up. Recovery. So we've got cold plunges, recovery legs, massage therapists, physiotherapists, just making sure that we're getting on top of any illness or injury that's there early. Sportnext has medicine consultants, imaging specialists, skin screening. And mental health and well-being is a really important part of that. So if you've got our physical fitness zone, we also have mental fitness areas where we've got a library, areas that there's journaling, virtual reality headsets, areas for relaxation, quiet areas that people can speak to their friends, family, shut themselves off, grab a kip. You know, often people are playing pretty jet-lagged, so they're traveling to a different part of the world and having to play straight away. Because actually, golf is very, very beneficial for mental health overall. But as a touring professional, it's really difficult. It sounds glamorous, and a lot of the players don't want to complain because of this, but you're away from your family for 30 weeks of the year. You're in different environments. There's a lot of friendly faces, perhaps not your true friends. And there's a lot of pressure. If you don't play well, you don't earn. You then may feel a sense of guilt regarding letting family down, letting your coach or your caddy or your professional team down as well. So, you know, it's an incredibly demanding existence that I think John Fry and his work at Mirco College, the likes of Margot Mountjoy and Will Winterby and Ian Peake have done a great job in helping us understand. And actually then just putting in place facilities and people to support our players, be that psychologists, psychiatrists, Sportnext as medicine doctors. And most common issues that we see in our pro players, the number one is hand and wrist issues. Number two is mental health and well-being. Number three are the lumbar spine issues. So you can see how important it is that we are looking after physical health, but mental health is just as prominent for us as well.
Absolutely. No, that sounds like a wonderful facility that you've built out there. And yeah, it's something, you know, you mentioned Ian Peake there. Like I said before, you know, I found it really interesting what he was sharing in that regard as well. And how hopefully, by the sounds of things, not only are you and your colleagues on the medical side actually putting the facilities and infrastructure there around the professionals now, they are seemingly feeling more and more like they can open up and talk about these things as well. Because on the surface, from the outside looking in, it can seem glamorous. And this typical thing of fans of the game, whether it's football, golf, whatever, these high paid athletes, I dare say in the same way that the golf industry has been too afraid to talk about the health and well-being benefits, maybe the professionals feel too like they would get panned for talking about, like, you know, the challenges they're going through. But the reality is they are human beings. Hopefully the tide is turning and that they feel like, you know, they're being heard.
I hope so, because as you say, believe it or not, they are humans and they are living in a goldfish bowl. And if I lived with the degree of scrutiny that a lot of our athletes have, you know, it'd be quite uncomfortable. So there are obvious benefits to the lifestyle that a lot of the players have, but it is really difficult as well. And I think it's right that we listen to the players, we put the things in place that are helpful, but also it's a bit of a community. You know, the players are pretty good at looking out for each other. Caddies, players look out for each other. Hopefully we do the same as staff as well.
And yeah.
I think, you know, the golf community probably needs to appreciate that as well. You know, how can we interact with these people on the fairways? How can we interact with these people on social media? How can we recognise that the humans as well are phenomenally good at golf? And it's actually, you know, I've stood on a tee at golf tournaments before. I'm not a good golfer myself, but occasionally I'll, you know, play in events or support programs, etc. And it's so nerve-wracking. And, you know, imagine just people watching you, shouting stuff at you, be that on social media, etc. as well. It's an amazing world, but it's also a pretty demanding world.
I have to admit, part of me would love to play a pro-am, but having a friend that just went and watched the pro-am at Wentworth, at the BMW, earlier this year, and just how close the spectators are. I mean, I'm prone to the odd shank, just like any amateur out there. I just think the backside would fall out of me, Andrew. I just don't think I'd be able to do it, you know, just for fear of killing someone, basically, you know. But so, yeah, you realise the pressure that these guys must feel on the regular. I tell you, last thing before I let you go, I mentioned Full Swing right back at the beginning. I mean, take us behind the scenes of that. How does that feel to have a camera crew thrust in your face when you're effectively like, because when I go to the doctor, I'm not expecting to, you know, have a camera launched in front of me to have my foot injury treated to. But I just am fascinated by that, because that is obviously now a side to elite sport, where the likes of Netflix are coming into Formula One, to golf, to football, almost whether you like it or not. So, you know, how did you deal with that, and how do you see the professionals dealing with it?
I think golf is entertainment. Of course, it's a sport, but it's also entertainment. And if there is a film crew around, they might be filming the ice baths, they might be filming the sort of food or the services that we have. But where it involves individuals, then you're always asking the individual if that's what they want. You're not wanting any pressure put upon them. You know, a certain number of the players are contracted to Full Swing or want to do segments with Sky Sports or with sponsors that we'll quite often support. So we're pretty comfortable doing that. You know, again, if it's something that the athlete wants, then we'll try and ensure that the segment looks as good as it can, and that, you know, the story comes out to give a bit of behind the scenes as to what Tom achieved at the Open, or what other people have achieved at Ryder Cups or Open Championships or Tour Finals, etc. So I think hopefully those insights are helpful. We have got a chance quite often on the broadcast to talk about the health benefits of golf, about the health benefits of spectating, about the things that can help players be at their best as well. But I guess there's nothing quite like a human story and a golfer in front of you to grab the eyeballs and to bring something to life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what we're about too as well at GYH, is that storytelling and that human element and bringing it all to life. So we'll leave it there. Andrew, exceptionally grateful you've come on and given up your valuable time, because I know you're a busy man.
But keep up the great work, Chris. And to the listeners, please do listen to the rest of the podcast. They are terrific. Some of the other great things are golfandhealth.org, so www.golfandhealth.org. There's also Golf Health and Performance. And also there'll be a third International Congress in Golf and Health in Edinburgh in March and April that we hope to see a few of your listeners at as well.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Remember to subscribe for free to the Golf Yourself Healthy Substack using the link in the show notes. Our next episode is released on Monday the 27th of January and is only available there on Substack, so you won't want to miss out on that. In the meantime, however, please always, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.